Welcome to ITE 1, Module 1, Part 2. Today we're going to go over IRQs, IO addresses, and DMAs. So we're going to start with IRQs. Does anyone know anything about the IRQs at all? Can anyone tell me anything about them? Just to get a base on where everybody's at?
I believe I read that there are locations on some component. Forget how many now, maybe 16 or 12 or something. And ones for this and that. Some of them are signed, or some of them are not signed. But
that's right. There are 16 of them.
Let me know when you've finished IRQs, and I'll update you to 2009, but do what you've got there in the notes, because there are actually more than 16, but we'll get to that when you finish talking about them.
Oh, all right. There's a whole list of the actual IRQ numbers in your notes, so do read your notes. You may be quizzed on them, and try and remember them. For example, 0 is the system clock. And the interrupts are you... they're called interrupt requests, IRQs. They're used to request information from the CPU from various devices such as your CPU, your hard drive, your input-output devices, your adapter cards, all sorts of them. So every hardware device really should have an IRQ. And I'll let Carrie go into the 2009 stuff because that's a good idea.
Okay, just to tidy up there, an interrupt request line is a line that is actually connected to the circuit board, that's connected to the system board. There are generally 16 IRQs per interrupt controller. In modern PCs, you have an advanced programmable interrupt controller, which actually has 32, 48, 64, depending on how the IRQs are allocated. When a device wants the attention of the processor, so when it wants the attention of the CPU, it raises the IRQ line and says, "Oi!" And the CPU says, "What?" And it says, "Oh, I've got a packet of data for you." And the CPU goes, "Oh, right, yeah, okay, right, well, okay, we're done." And then the device can then trigger another interrupt request, and it can actually get the attention of the CPU. Without interrupt request lines, you would have to poll every device and see, have you got something for me? And that would be very inefficient. You have an advanced programmable interrupt controller in a modern PCs. And in fact, you can actually turn that on and off in the BIOS, and if it's turned on, you tend to end up with 24 IRQs on single processor machines or 32 on multiprocessor machines. If you want to know more about it, look up IO-APIC on Wikipedia. We don't cover it anymore in this course as such.
Okay, so usually you will not be working very much with IRQ numbers because Plug and Play assigns them automatically. The only time you'll be working with them is when something goes wrong. So IRQ numbers are assigned in the BIOS. So if you find that you put in an adapter card or something like that and you cannot boot into Windows, make sure to go in and check that the IRQs are not conflicting. Generally, I believe 10, 11, and 12 are free to assign other devices to. So if you've got something overlapping, try one of those IRQs and see if it works. 9, 10, 11, excuse me. Okay. 9, 10, 11 are free.
That's okay.
And if you want to assign something to another IRQ, try one of those and see if that fixes your problem. Also, IRQs are prioritized. I believe it's the lowest come first in priority. So if a lower device such as your keyboard sends an interrupt request, it's going to get more preference over your CD-ROM drive. Any questions on that or anything to add?
No, that's all good. I'm happy with that. And yes, they are prioritized, which means that the system timer, which keeps track of the time of day, is IRQ line 0 or interrupt request line 8, and it is the highest priority, and it has a higher priority over the keyboard, and then the lower priorities over that become your serial ports, your sound card, your floppy drive, that sort of thing. That's the order in which the priorities dip out.
Any questions?
Marcus's microphones aren't working at the moment, so he won't be asking any vocally.
Yep, I'm making a watch on the chat window, and if I don't get to you, somebody alert me to the fact that he has a question, and I'll answer it. Okay, I guess we're going on to I/O addresses. These are addresses used for software to communicate with components. They're not physical like the IRQs, but they're kind of software version of the interrupt request is how I like to think of it. They send and receive data for components, and they're usually referred to as hexadecimal addresses. Any questions on that?
It probably is worth pointing out that whilst it is possible to share interrupt request lines between devices, if they're PCI interrupt request lines, it is not possible to share I/O ports between devices. If you have two devices on the same I/O port, neither device will function properly. Whilst the I/O ports, they are usually allocated by the BIOS for PCI devices, although with ISA cards you actually do have to assign the I/O ports and stuff with jumpers. Hang on, we have a question in chat. Have you got that one, Grace?
I do. You can change the IRQ addresses in BIOS, but you can look at the IRQ addresses in your device manager and see what's assigned. So if you want to, you can go over and explore in your device manager and check out all of the I/O addresses, I believe the DMAs, and your IRQs, just to see what that's about.
Now, to do that, and a lot of people don't know how to do this, is you actually double-click with your mouse or your JAWS cursor on the item at the top of the device manager. Usually it says your computer name, so it'll say Kerry's box opened, and you actually JAWS cursor onto that and double-click, and that will actually bring you up a system summary. Remembering the quickest way to get into the device manager is Windows pause break, which will get you into the system properties, control tab, and then tab across to device manager button, or start run devmgmt.msc will get you straight into the device manager.
Okay, do we have any questions on that?
Actually, I think what we'll probably do is if people have got questions, type their name into the chat window so that way you can keep going, and then if somebody's got a question, they can type their name into the chat and you can stop and catch them.
Okay, we can do that. So next we're going to go through our DMA addresses. Direct memory access allows devices to communicate with main memory without accessing the CPU. So this is the, we're not going to interrupt the CPU channel. It can store information in main memory so that the devices can work without bugging the CPU pretty much. Okay, if nobody has any questions, that is the end of Module 1. We can take questions on any part of Module 1's information now.
Just a quick question from me, actually. Has everybody seen the message to the announcement list telling them that the recording of last week's lecture is available on the website? Did everybody get that?
Yes.
All right, I'd encourage you to download those modules if you want to go back over them. There's a lot of material in those modules, and you will not remember it all from one listening through. So put it on while you're brushing the dog, doing the dishes, whatever you do, so that you can actually listen to those lectures, because there's a lot embedded in them if you get to it. And they're MP3s, so they should play on just about anything that you want to put them on. Bookmark 24, inserted. Yes, Jenny puts hers on her Victorita stream.